From Pakistan to Hollywood to special guests, we've got it covered live from Malaysia today.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Mothers and fathers send their kids to school to learn and to be safe and to dream and to find opportunity. Instead, today they are gone, wiped away by Taliban assassins who serve a dark and almost medieval vision.
That was the voice of Secretary of State John Kerry talking about the slaughter of the children in a military school in Pakistan, kids as young as 10 years old, over 120 slaughtered by Taliban terrorists. This is Michael Brown. I'm here in Malaysia, which is a largely Muslim nation. Broadcast for the first time from here yesterday. Today we are live from Malaysia. We do have a special show planned. I believe you'll be blessed and encouraged and strengthened. But I woke up this morning, and right now it's a little bit past 3 in the morning, Malaysia time. I slept for a few hours after teaching last night. I got up, escorted to the business lounge of the hotel with two young men from Singapore, keeping me company and making sure that no one else comes in the lounge in the middle of the night to use it. So we have it to ourselves, where we have the most stable connections for our radio broadcast. I woke up, looked at email and thought, oh no, horrible news from Pakistan. And of course, right before that, day before that, in a much more minor way, but still tragic news of Islamic terrorism, radical terrorism in Sydney, Australia. We need to get the message of the Redeemer out more and more and more. We need to share the good news of new life in Jesus, the Messiah, more and more and more. We alone have hope for the nations. We alone have a message of salvation and transformation. In fact, we need to press into God all the more in our own lives to live out the fullness of God's promises. Look at it like this: a dark and lost world which mocks us, which hates us, which disregards our message. A dark and lost world desperately needs the message that we have. Desperately needs to know about this Savior. It may mock him. It may say he's just another voice or prophet or false teacher or God or whatever. But we know the need of the world is for redemption through Jesus the Messiah. And tragically, in so many of these events, as in Pakistan, the casualties are Muslims. Muslims killing other Muslims. I mentioned, was it yesterday on the air, beheadings in Somalia, Muslims beheading other Muslims. We need to pray that the light of the gospel will shine. We need to pray right now for, who can imagine the devastation of these families, that God's mercy would come to them, and that somehow, in the midst of their religion, in the midst of their faith, that somehow they would realize that there is more, and they would come to know who Jesus really is. 866-34-TRUTH. We have some special guests that are going to be joining us in the next, 2 hours of time. Some special guests to talk about a number of different subjects, very much unrelated to what's just happened in Pakistan. But I wanted to address that first. I wanted to address this gaping wound that must be overwhelming in the nation right now, one of the most horrific things that's ever taken place. When we come back after the break, I want to encourage you. I want to encourage everyone who is married, and everyone who's looking to be in a marital relationship. I want to encourage and bless you at this time of the year here in December. I'm normally home, missed a concert with one of our grandkids, but can't wait to see it on video. We'll be right back.
want, for fire we please.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast. Michael Brown coming your way live from Malaysia, where it is now 3:07 in the morning. I'm in the business center of the hotel, accompanied by three guests that are from the church in Singapore that brought me over to Malaysia after my India trip. And they're keeping me safe, keeping me company, making sure that nobody comes in to disrupt us. I don't think the business center is going to be too busy at 3:07 in the morning. A few months back, my producer, Matt, asked about having some special guests on the show, authors of well-known books, themes that had been out there for some years, and just to schedule these guests in at different times of the year. And some as we're getting closer to Christmas, not on a particular theme, but because of the importance of what they've written, what they've had to say. And I said, let's do it. And he said, well, how about Dr. Gary Chapman and the Five Love Languages? And the amazing thing about that book, we're just talking about a heartbreaking situation in Pakistan, slaughter of children, the meaning of life that comes out of family together. And here's a book, Five Love Languages, that continues to be a best-selling book year after year after year after year, and has helped transform the relationships probably of millions of people. So as our hearts are heavy over events around the world, it reminds us all the more of how critically important marriage and family are as the foundation of life and the foundation of society. So I'm blessed to have with us on the air today Dr. Gary Chapman, his best-selling book for many, many years, The Five Love Languages. Dr. Chapman, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Well, thank you, Dr. Brown. It's good to be with you today.
I really appreciate you coming on and joining us. How many years has The Five Love Languages been a best-selling and a steady-selling book now?
You know, the book has been out for 22 years, and every year it sells more than the year before.
Really?
And that's been going on for 22 years. It has sold over 10 million copies in English and has been translated in 50 languages around the world, which I think speaks to the deep human need for love, and particularly in the marriage relationship and the parent-child relationship. If that need is not met, then, as you know, there's a lot of fractured relationships.
Yeah, and fractured relationships, unfortunately, are at the very foundation of our society today. Marriage, family coming under attack, that means the society as a whole comes under attack. What you share, though, about selling more copies each year than the year before, I've written 25 books, and I'm 100% sure that's never happened with any of my 25. So, I mean, that's utterly remarkable. And I'm one of the readers that, like everyone, heard about the five love languages and heard about the principles of it, but it's probably within the last 5 years that I got the book myself and said, wow, this is amazingly insightful. So why did you decide to write The Five Love Languages?
You know, I had been counseling probably 15 years before I wrote that book, and I kept hearing the same stories over and over in my office. You know, one of them would say, I just feel like my spouse doesn't love me. It's just like we're roommates anymore. And the other one would say, I don't understand that. You know, I do this and this and this. Why would you not feel loved? And so I knew there was a pattern to all of this. So what I did was go through 12 years of notes that I made when I was counseling people and asked myself the question, when someone sat in my office and said, I feel like my spouse doesn't love me, what did they want? What were they complaining about? And the answers fell into five categories, and I later called them the five love languages. So I started using this in my counseling, and it was amazing. Couples would come back after 3 weeks and say, Gary, this has changed everything. The whole emotional climate is different between us. And then I started using it in small groups. And I did all of that probably 5 years before I wrote the book. And I had the thought, you know, if I could put this concept in a book, write it in the language of the common person, leave out all the psychological jargon, mm-hmm. maybe I could help a lot of people that I would never have time to see in my office. So that's what motivated me to write it. And obviously, I have been greatly rewarded and blessed that so many people have found it helpful in their marriage.
Did you have any clue when you were writing the book that it would have the impact that it had?
I'd have to say no. You know, I did know that the concept was powerful. I did know that it could change lives and save marriages. But no, I had no idea that it would expand like it has. And what really surprised me most was the translations into other languages, because my academic background is anthropology, cultural anthropology. I did an undergrad and a graduate degree, a master's degree in anthropology, so I was very sensitive to cultural differences. And the Spanish publisher was the first to come, and I said to my publisher when they'd asked permission, I said, well, I don't know if this works in Spanish culture, you know. I mean, I discovered this in Middle America, you know. And they said, well, they've read it, and they say it works. And I said, well, then let's give them permission to publish it. And they did. It became their bestseller, and I think it's still their bestseller. And then came the French and the German and on down the line, as I said, up until 50 languages have been translated. So, you know, that really surprised me, that this concept would transfer into other cultures as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I was talking to some Singapore Christians last night, a pastor and others, and I was asking how come leaders haven't confronted a particular issue, and they said, well, you know, it's our Asian culture. We tend not to be confrontational. I just come from India right before that, when there's certain etiquette with doing things a certain way, and it seems relationships and family can be so different, and yet there are human universals, and obviously you've hit on key universal principles. So why is this concept of the five love languages so important in marriage, obviously around the world? Why is it so foundational, so important?
I think because we are made in the image of God. The Bible says of God, God is love. That is one of the essential characteristics of God, is love. And we're born with the capacity to be loved and to love. And I think it's such a fundamental part of who we are that if we don't feel loved by the significant people in our lives, which in the family would be husband, wife, and parent, child, if we don't feel loved by those individuals, then a child will grow up with a lot of internal struggles. And in the teenage years, the child will go looking for love, often in the wrong places. And so I think because it strikes at that deep human need, and almost everyone agrees that one of our most fundamental needs on the human level in human relationships is the emotional need to feel love. And what this does is help couples do what they would like to do, and many of them are trying to do. It's helping them do it effectively, because you have to speak that love in a language the other person will hear and understand.
So you're saying that despite years of counseling and trying to work things out in many relationships, and the counselor will sit down and explain how people are missing each other and so on, that sometimes there are more fundamental principles that are being missed, and so our best efforts, we kind of keep going around in a circle. When we realize these deeper principles, which obviously you drew out of counseling, then it's almost, it's not magic, but now that button gets pressed and that need gets met in a much more dramatic way.
Exactly. And I think many couples are sincere. In fact, I think almost all couples, at least in the early years of marriage, they're sincere. They didn't get married with the idea that we're going to make each other miserable. You know, they got married with the idea we're going to support each other and love each other and encourage each other and help each other and live life together, and that was their dream. But many of them, as you well know, when we get married, we're pushed along by these strong emotional feelings. We often call it falling in love or being in love. It's an emotional high that draws us together in the first place. But the average lifespan of that is 2 years. We come down off the high, and then we're back in the real world. And that's when we have to learn how to communicate love to the other person. And that's when love requires work. You know, when you're in love, you're just pushed along by the emotions. It's not any effort for you. You just do it. You're overwhelmed in doing good things for the other person. But when you come down off that high, then you have to learn how to communicate love in a way that's meaningful to the other person.
And the five love languages listed, for those who may have been living on another planet and haven't heard of these yet: quality time, words of affirmation, gifts, acts of service, and physical touch. Dr. Chapman, when we come back, I want to ask you about what a love tank is, what that concept is, and then how this translates out with parents and kids. Many of us have looked at this in terms of husband-wife relationships as the book was initially written and as it addresses, but you've expanded on that now over the years in terms of other aspects of family relationships. I want to talk about this in the most practical way that will help all the parents who are listening. Again, if you don't have the book yet, remarkable New York Times bestseller, mega bestseller, The Five Love Languages, the author, Dr. Gary Chapman. We'll be right back live from Malaysia.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire broadcast. Michael Brown coming your way live from Malaysia. My guest is Dr. Gary Chapman, author of the famous, best-selling, highly influential book, The Five Love Languages. Dr. Chapman, right before the break, I mentioned that we wanted to talk about the concept of a love tank. What exactly do you mean by this? Why is this so important to understand?
You know, Michael, I use that picture trying to just communicate to the reality that all of us need to feel loved. You know, in a car, the gasoline tank is extremely important. If it's empty, the car isn't moving, unless, of course, it's an electric car, okay? But if the gasoline tank is full, you can drive for a long ways. Well, we also have, I like to picture, an emotional love tank. And in a child, for example, if that child feels loved by the parents, if the love tank is full, child grows up normally. If they don't, if the love tank is empty and they don't feel loved, they grow up, as I said earlier, with a lot of internal struggles. And eventually, we'll go outside the family trying to find love. But I like to also use this for married couples because I believe adults have a love tank. And the person you would most like to love you, if you're married, is your spouse. You know, if your love tank is full in a marriage, that is, you feel loved by your spouse, life is beautiful. But if the love tank is empty and you feel like they don't love me, they wish they weren't married to me, life can begin to look pretty dark. And much of the misbehavior of married individuals grows out of an empty love tank. Now, that doesn't explain it. That doesn't make it right. But a lot of people end up doing things that are detrimental to them and the marriage. But and emotionally, it's growing out of an empty love tank.
All right. What if someone would say, okay, I understand that your, quote, love language is quality time, so I'm going to spend quality time with you. But my spouse knows that I'm doing this to try to show love. Will it really work? In other words, won't it be artificial? I mean, I'm just going through the motions. Why is there actually something going on behind that as to why it does work?
I think, Michael, that sometimes when we begin to do this, it can feel a little unnatural because you haven't done it before. You know, if you start spending quality time and asking your wife or your husband, you know, what would you like to do? You know, and you start having dinner with them, you start taking walks with them, you start sitting on the couch and give them 20 minutes every night and talking with them. Yeah, it's going to seem a little strange, and they're probably going to wonder, how long is this going to last? So it'll seem a little different for both of you. But because this is their love language, and they know what you're trying to do, you are trying to communicate love to them in a meaningful way, it's important, and they get it. And consequently, if you continue doing it, it changes the whole marriage over a long time. Now, some people, however, will read the book and will say, okay, I'm going to try this. Their spouse won't read the book. They don't even know the concept, and they say, I'm going to try this. So they start speaking the spouse's love language for 3 weeks and come back to me and say, well, it didn't work. Nothing happened. No changes in them. And I say, are you loving or are you manipulating? You know, if you're doing this in order to get them to do something back for you, that's manipulation. But if you're doing this because you genuinely care about their well-being and you found out that this is going to help them, then you do it over the long haul, and chances are, as you get 3 months into this, you're going to find them reaching out to love you because you are touching them at a very deep point in their hearts and minds.
Mm. All right, so let's take words of affirmation as an example, and let's take parents with a teenager, and the kid is going through a rough phase, and the kid is often irresponsible, and perhaps over the course of the day does more things to provoke the parents and does more negative things to the parents over the course of the day than positive things. How do you bring words of affirmation into the midst of a challenging relationship like that?
Yeah, it's an excellent question, and many, many parents are there, of course. And by nature, what we do is we condemn the child. I don't mean we're trying to. We're trying to correct them, you know, but we're pointing out to them what they're doing wrong. And that message comes across to that child is that I can't please my parents. And so it pushes them away. I remember a couple who said to me, our teenage son will do nothing. He comes home from school, he watches TV, he lies on the couch, he won't go out to play, he won't do anything. And so we discovered that his love language was words of affirmation, and what they had been doing was condemning him for this lifestyle. And whenever they turned it around and started looking for things that they could affirm him for, within 3 weeks, his whole countenance changed, his whole behavior pattern changed. You see, if a child's love language is words of affirmation, and all they're hearing from the parent are words of condemnation, they're ostracizing the child, and the child feels further and further apart from them. Turn that around, and it draws the child back to you. Now, it's difficult. Let's face it, Michael. You know, if you got a child like you described, a teenager like you described, it's difficult to look for and find those positive things. But listen, they're your child. There's got to be a lot of positive things about them. So look for them, find them, and give them words of affirmation. It may be about the way they look. It may be about their muscles if they're a guy. It may be something you heard them say that was positive or something they did that was positive. But you look for those things, and you verbally affirm them.
And what are the books after your initial five love languages that you've written or study guides that are able to equip people, parents, as well as husbands and wives? Not sure if I got disconnected there, but... speaking with Dr. Gary Chapman, author of The Five Love Languages. It's a classic book. It's been out for many years now, as Dr. Chapman said, each year selling better than the year before. And when we spoke about, Matt and I, my producer Matt, we spoke about having some special guests on in December in different times. Some classic books as well as books just written. I said, yeah, absolutely. Let us do that. So the book, The Five Love Languages, if you don't have it, I really encourage you to get it. I found it very practical to read. I found it giving me great insight after Nancy and I had been happily married for more than 3 decades. When I read the book myself and found, oh, this is useful. This does help. This gives insights that can deepen our relationship and get us through any conflicts or misunderstandings, which do happen, but available in different editions as well for parents and children. So the book, Five Love Languages, Dr. Gary Chapman, just in case you don't have it yet. And friends, the battle continues to rage over the Bible, the existence of God, the relevance of the book of Genesis, science, creation. We've got a special resource offer from Dr. John Rankin, a real eye-opener on the book of Genesis at a tremendously reduced price. Go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire, live from Malaysia, where it is now 3:30 in the morning, and I'm accompanied by, hey, let's just a little shout out here, everybody in the, go ahead.
Hello.
All right, there we go, just got a little group from the church. They took up my offer to join me in the middle of the night here as I was doing live radio in the midst of teaching sessions. I've got one more segment with my guest, Dr. Gary Chapman, and the book, The Five Love Languages. Dr. Chapman, with your experience as a counselor and then with your degrees in cultural anthropology, as you look at American society, you look at the fracturing of the family, you look at young people growing up with various problems, are you able to kind of diagnose things and see where the breakdowns are coming in family and relationships? I don't mean in every case, but in broad strokes, see how the principles you're talking about are often lacking in our families in America today?
You know, I think, Michael, there's no one answer to that, but I do think there are a number of factors. One huge factor in the American society is the role of fathers.
Yeah.
So many children grow up in homes where there is no father. Either the mother never married and had a child out of wedlock, or there was a divorce and the father left and the child has grown up having almost no contact with the father. And, you know, God designed the family to be a mom and to have a mom and a dad, and both of those are extremely important. And it doesn't mean that a child who grows up in a single home cannot be a mature adult. They can, but it does mean that they have some scars that are there because of either the rejection or the lack of the father being there at all. That's one issue. I think in other families where mom and dad are there, that often mom and dad have never learned how to have a positive, loving, supportive relationship. So the climate of the marriage relationship is adversarial. And what the child hears is mom and dad arguing with each other. Not every day, but periodically they have these huge arguments, and the child hears this. And that gives a lot of insecurity to the child.
Yeah.
And many of them enter adulthood with the idea, I'm not so sure I want to get married, because they remember what their mom and dad's marriage was like. So I think that's a factor. I think another factor is the pressure of time in our society. You know, you would think with all the advancements we have in technology that we'd have more time to interact and interface as a family and do things together as a family. But what I'm finding is that technology is often pulling the family apart so
yep.
that a child is in one room on the iPad, another child's in the other room watching a television program. Mom and dad are on their computers. And we're interfacing with other people, but we're not interfacing with each other. So I think there's a number of factors that are there. But I do believe this, Michael. We've got to rediscover God's basic plan of a mom and dad who love each other, support each other, love their children, know how to raise their children, how to have guidelines and have discipline and love. And if we can rediscover that, then I think our culture, or any culture, can not only survive but thrive.
Yeah, very, very well said. There's so many cultural issues that I'm involved with and issues of redefining marriage today, and yet another assault on the mom and dad raising their kids together. And what I'm really encouraging folks to do is listen, if we can get our own houses in order, if we can live by biblical principles, if we can have godly marriages, then that's the key. We do our best to help society go in the right direction, but ultimately we're responsible for our own lives. And the principles you've laid out in the Five Love Languages continue to speak to so many. Dr. Chapman, I really appreciate not just you coming on the air, but after all these years, your enthusiasm and passion for the subject that has blessed so many. Much appreciation to you, sir.
Well, thank you, Michael, and thanks for what you're doing. Keep up the good work.
Hey, we are going for it. God bless you, dear brother. All right, friends, we're going to be right back live from Malaysia. By the way, did you see the Exodus movie? Did you see the Exodus movie? If so, tell me what you thought about it. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
The images are absolutely gut-wrenching. Young children carried away in ambulances, a teacher burned alive in front of the students, a house of learning turned into a house of unspeakable horror.
That was Secretary of State John Kerry talking about the slaughter of children, teachers at a military school in Pakistan by Taliban terrorists. This is Michael Brown coming away live from Malaysia. As I'm here in Malaysia, I'm reminded of the fact, as this is a Muslim country predominantly, that there are hundreds of millions of Muslims around the world who absolutely abhor what the Taliban did, that would say this has nothing to do with their religion. And in this case, in Pakistan, it's Muslims killing other Muslims. And yet I am also reminded of the fact, with terrorist attack after terrorist attack related to Islam, that there is an extreme violent side to it. And to just say, well, this has nothing to do with Islam, simply does not work. Things like this are not happening in the name of Jesus worldwide and based on Scripture. They're not happening with other religions like Buddhism and Hinduism and certainly Judaism around the world in this particular way. So it's, again, just sobering, gut-wrenching. We started the show talking about what has happened in Pakistan, and we had a special guest previously scheduled, and it was important to me that we talk about the issues we did with marriage and family. But I want to talk about a few other things with you now. 866-34-TRUTH. In the next hour, we're going to have a guest on who focuses on what Christians are doing as consumers, faith-driven consumers, and often looks at what's happening with the media and how Christians respond to that. He's going to talk to us about the Exodus movie. If you're unable to catch the show on the radio, if your schedule's tight, just go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and click on Latest Broadcast later today. You'll be able to hear my interview with Chris Stone about the Exodus movie. And if you missed any of my interview with Dr. Gary Chapman about five love languages, that'll be online as well. But if you saw the Exodus movie, I'm just curious to hear from you. If you went to see the movie, what your thoughts were. I posted questions about this on Facebook and on Twitter, and overwhelmingly, the responses that I saw, I didn't read all of them, in the midst of ministry here in Malaysia. And right now, as you know, it's 3:40 in the morning Malaysia time. But I read a number of the comments, and the comments were overwhelmingly negative from a biblical perspective, from a Christian perspective. Just curious to know if you saw the Exodus movie, what your thoughts were. It doesn't have to be, you know, careful analysis. Well, the Bible says this, the movie says this, just your impressions. What your impressions were, in particular, if you believe the Bible to be God's Word. 866-34-TRUTH. Also, at this time of the year, we generally devote one broadcast to a Christmas debate. We devote one broadcast to debating, is it right for Christians to have a Christmas tree? Is it right to celebrate the birth of Jesus on December 25th? And some will say, how could you debate it? Of course, it's a wonderful tradition. And others say, what are you kidding me? It's pagan. We'll probably do one of the debates. I don't debate it. I just facilitate it and let you, the callers, discuss this. I must say that I think we've heard the major arguments, pro and con, but it's always a perennial issue. So this is not the day for a full debate on it, but I may take some calls on the subject, and we'll start in Delano, California. Rudy, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hey, Michael Brown, thank you for having me once again. I do have a question regarding Christmas. As Christians, I just want a simple yes or no. Is it okay to celebrate Christmas as Christians? I get a lot of disagreements by other Christians who take the, I believe it's in Jeremiah chapter 10. I could be yep. quoting it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, is it okay?
Right. The yes or no is it is 100% between you and God. It is 100% a matter of your own convictions between you and God. Jeremiah 10, which talks about how the pagans decorate a tree, has no reference whatsoever to a Christmas tree unless it's for the purpose of idol worship. It's talking about decorating a tree as an idolatrous tree of something that is being worshipped, and that's what's being condemned in Jeremiah, the 10th chapter. If it's simply a family tradition, if it's something you do that helps you celebrate the birth of Jesus, if it's just something fun that you do as a family in a non-religious way, it's 100% between you and God. Jeremiah 10 definitely doesn't apply to it. Now, if people say, yeah, but we know December 25th, that was a pagan holiday, and we know the origin of the tree goes back to this and that. If you're convinced that those arguments are right and you can't do it in good conscience, fine. If it's completely innocent to you or even a positive celebration, fine. It is ultimately between you and God. Romans 14 would come into place here. It's a matter of personal conviction. If you can do it with faith before God, fine. If not, not. So there is no dogmatic answer. Now, I know some people would say, come on, Mike, you're compromising. Everybody knows this and that. Others would say, Mike, you're compromising the other way. I could care less about that. I'm clear that Scripture does not address it directly, and therefore it's a personal matter between you and your family and God.
That is awesome. Thank you so much for answering my question. I appreciate your time.
You bet. God bless you, man. All right, here's a little picture of the world that we live in. All right, are you ready? Just switching subjects for a moment, because this note just came in on Twitter. I was asked to do a debate on the website Debate Out. It's pretty edgy. I've looked at it here and there, and the subjects that it's covering are pretty edgy. But it says this is news for our generation, okay? The website is Debate Out, so debateout.com. News for our generation. And I was contacted and asked would I answer certain questions about a subject that is a big debatable subject these days. It's a subject that I was told is a big hot topic. Would I debate it? So this is, I was asked questions, I answer them. Others are asked questions, they answer. We didn't debate back and forth. And I just got a note moments ago saying that it has now been posted. It is Falling for Family. Should consensual incest be legal? We've been telling you for years about the slippery moral slope in our society. We've been telling you for years about compromised moral principles of our society. We've been talking for years about the larger spirit of sexual anarchy. We've been saying that redefining marriage and homosexual activism, that these things are not the new civil rights movement. They are the continuation of the sexual revolution of the 60s. And that once you redefine marriage, once you redefine moral relationships, that you are going to now have to say, well, what about adult incest? What about other things like this? And we're told, no, you're crazy. There is no slippery slope. None of this is going to happen. We've pointed out that the same media that was celebrating homosexual relations and bringing them to the forefront a decade back and longer and now more and more commonly, that this is the same media that's celebrating polygamy, that's celebrating polyamory, that has reality TV shows on teen pregnancy, and that is having more and more scenes featuring adult incest. I've not seen any of them, but I've read the scripts and read about these things and documented them in different articles, and we'll document them as I discuss sexual anarchy in my new book that'll be out sometime next year on how to outlast the gay revolution. But here it is, Falling for Family, Should Consensual Incest Be Legal? And the article says, the debate, when confronted with the idea of consensual incest, many people have a visceral reaction of disgust. It's a societal taboo that runs deep. Taboo aside, some adults do develop sexual relationships with their consenting adult relatives, and they are pushing for their unions to be legally recognized nationwide. We ask the question, should consensual incest between consenting adults be legal? They give further background to it. And then here they've got a picture of me representing my viewpoint. It is so critically important that family members do not look at each other in a sexualized or romantic way. And here's a psychoanalyst who says if we enforce laws on the subject, then we are creating a sort of fundamentalism about who people need to be. I don't think we want to be that kind of a society. And then another professor says, my bottom line is this, consensual sex between two adults should always be legal, sibling or otherwise. Let's see. Whoa. Everybody except me. Everybody except me says it's a good idea. What do you know?
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, I'm staying with this subject for a moment. As we talk about being a voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution, that means that society needs a revolution. That means that we need radical, dramatic, sweeping change. That means that things cannot keep going on the way they're going on without more fragmentation and destruction of family and society. Michael Brown coming away live from Malaysia. I have been asked by the church that sponsored me and having a church retreat, so most of the members of the church coming together for about four intensive days. I've been speaking each night and then twice in the morning and in the afternoons they have free time for family activities, but it's a pretty rigorous schedule as they're getting, probably about 5 hours of teaching a day. We've got Q&A time as well. And one of the main subjects they asked me to address here in Singapore, I say here in Singapore, I'm in Malaysia, right next door, literally, right over the bridge. But I've been asked to address the issue of LGBT activism because it is pervasive in society. And in Singapore, there's tremendous pressure from America, American companies, American educational institutions, even the American government, to redefine marriage and to change the law in Singapore regarding homosexuality and homosexual relations. These are issues affecting people all around the world. And when I speak in other countries, I simply say, hey, I'm not here to demonize anyone. Everyone hears me speak and knows the compassion that I have and the concern that I have for individuals in the midst of our differences. But I just tell them, look at what has happened in America. Look at what has happened in America. And when you look at what has happened in America, you see what's coming your way unless you do the right thing. And it's time for Christians to stand together and do the right thing. And that begins with getting our own houses in order. That begins with repenting of our sins and our immorality and our impurity and our no-fault divorce and our neglect of kids and on, those that are guilty. If the shoe fits, we wear it. We repent and we turn to God asking for his mercy, and then we stand for what is right in society. And as I shared some of the things that have happened in America, not predicting the future, just sharing what has happened, people were shocked. Shocked. Many young people were shocked. Look, a survey was done about moral values in America, and we were compared with England and with Canada. Now listen to this. According to this recent poll, 82% of Brits, 83% of Canadians, and 59% of Americans say that it is fine to have sexual relations outside of marriage. 83% of Canadians and 82% of the people of England. Is it any surprise that Canada was one of the first countries to redefine marriage and say that marriage could be the union of a man and a woman? Isn't it any surprise that England has done that this year? Isn't it any surprise that it's such a massive discussion in America? You say, what's that got to do with people having sex out of wedlock? The whole point is it is part of the larger decline of our sexual morals. The same society that says sleeping together out of wedlock is fine, having kids together out of wedlock is fine, is the same society that says two men or two women being, quote, married is also fine. So here it is, the website debateout.com. It asks the question, should consensual incest be legal? All right. So they put me first. I appreciate them giving me the first shot. It is so critically important that family members do not look at each other in a sexualized or romantic way. The question, so are you fearful that if we legalize consensual incest relationships, it might be a gateway to open the door to abusive incest relationships? I respond that there's a reason that this has been a taboo socially. I said there's something sacred within the family. There's something where children must feel safe with parents, where parents must have a special view of their children as children. For the most part, when you grow up together, that is what takes away sexualization. If kids are raised separately and meet later in life and experience what some call genetic sexual attraction, you really open up a Pandora's box. Then they interview, and they've got the rest of my discussion there. Then they interview Keith Pullman, a psychoanalyst. He has some hesitations about consensual incest, mostly centered on the genetic deficiencies that can be passed on to offspring. That said, he ultimately agrees that a law prohibiting or punishing these unions violates privacy and freedom for these individuals. She says, the interviewer, Katie, give me your best argument on whether you think consensual incest should be legalized or not. He says, I think the only really good argument against adult incest is really in terms of the children that result from it. Then Deborah Lieberman, assistant professor in the Adult and Health Department at the University of Miami. She believes that society's disgust with incestuous relationships and the subsequent taboo is not enough of a reason to ban these unions. Quote, my bottom line is this, consensual sex between two adults should always be legal, sibling or otherwise. The question when it comes to consensual sex between two adult siblings, it's disgusting, but so what? She says disgust shouldn't be the reason why we have a norm and therefore laws against it. And then Diane Rinella, an author based out of San Francisco, believes that every person has the fundamental right to make their own decisions. Quote, if we are going to be equal and we are going to fight for equality, we need to do it across the board. And she's hoping that change will come. And then Keith Pullman, creator of the Full Marriage Equality blog, thinks that a focus on criminalizing consensual incest detracts from crimes, more serious, harmful crimes. He believes that people should not be legally reprimanded for who they love as long as the relationship is consensual and otherwise healthy. Quote, by legalizing consensual incest, which is a victimless crime, we free up resources to fight crimes with actual victims. With all respect to Keith Pullman's comment, I wonder how much of our resources, how much is being spent on fighting incestuous relationships. Come on, I think realistically, you're not freeing up any resource for anything else, but you are opening the door wide for all kinds of other problems. The fact that this is being debated, the fact that I can be asked to debate this subject and that you have other voices. Here's an article on the future of marriage by Tammy Nelson. We have to keep widening the possibilities. Friends, when you redefine marriage, you make it meaningless. When you don't open your eyes to what's happening in the larger moral trends in society, you become part of the problem. The answer lies with us, God's people. I don't mean that we take over society and impose our views on others. I mean we stand for what's right, we advocate for what's right, and we live out what is right. If we have been a blessing to you this year, if we've ministered to you through the radio broadcast, through what we've written and the YouTube videos we've posted, please take a moment, go to my website right now, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Please go there now and click on the latest video, just 5 minutes long, but please watch it and stand together with us. My bottom line today, we are in desperate need of a moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. If we live rightly before God and go against the grain of society, we will bring about change. From Pakistan to Hollywood to special guests, we've got it covered live from Malaysia today.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I'm here in Malaysia. It is 4 in the morning.
Hello.
Let's see, one, two, three, four. We had a fifth, but we got four guys here with me up in the middle of the night. They are with me in the business center of the hotel here in Malaysia. It's the only place that has a cable connection for my radio equipment. And they're alert. We've been having a full schedule. We start at 9 in the morning. We worship. And then I teach two sessions till about 12:15, 12:30. And then they have afternoons free, do some family events, fun like that. And then we come together again at night at 7 o'clock. We worship together. And then 7:30. We start at 7:30, right? I think we start at 7:30. We worship together for a half hour. So then I teach for another 90 minutes. We've got 10 teaching sessions. But radio, as always, in the middle of the night. So I got up a little after 2, was met by some of the gentlemen, brought me down to the business center here to keep me company and to make sure that nobody happened to walk in. And during the 2-minute breaks in the show, we turn the fan on, cool it down a little here, and then turn it back off. So blessed to be here, coming your way live from Malaysia. Last hour, we talked about the tragedy in Pakistan, the slaughter of more than 100 school children in a military school in Pakistan by Taliban terrorists. I also spoke with Dr. Gary Chapman, previously scheduled to be on with us, author of the mega best-selling book, Five Love Languages. And ultimately, it was very relevant because we're talking about marriage and family. And as the show was going on, I got a tweet letting me know that the debate that I was part of on the Debate Out website, which is very much an edgy website for the younger generation, very much focused on, well, let's just say its approach to moral issues would be different than mine, but they're debating the issues, which I appreciate. And we were contacted and asked if I would participate in a debate where I'd be asked questions, give my answers, and then different ones would weigh in. So we're not going back and forth with each other, but we are interacting to the same questions and themes. The question of adult consensual incest, should it be legal? Or just consensual incest, I didn't even say adult here, should it be legal? Remarkable that this is being debated, reminds us of the times in which we live. I just posted a link to this on Facebook. Out of all those that were asked to come on and debate this, I was the only one out of, what, five? I was the only one saying that it should not be legal. This gives you an insight into the society in which we live today and why we are on the air as your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. We will be changing topics yet again in this second hour. And we're going to start by talking about Christians going to the movies and the Exodus movie. We're going to be joined by Chris Stone of Faith Driven Consumers in a moment. But did you go and see the Exodus movie? 866-34-TRUTH. Did you go and see the Exodus movie? If so, what were your impressions? Were you stirred and blessed by it? Did it strengthen your appreciation for the God of the Bible and his great works? Were you frustrated? Did you feel it was unbiblical or anti-biblical? Did you feel you were taken advantage of in any way? Here's yet another faith-based movie or Bible-based movie, like Noah, now Exodus in the same year, and yet certain ways the biblical narrative is either ignored or undermined. If you saw the movie, give us a call. I'd like to hear from you, 866-34-TRUTH. We come back, we're going to get an expert opinion from Chris Stone of Faith Driven Consumers. We will be right back live from Malaysia.
God of light, hear our cry, send God by. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Do not be afraid! God is with us!
That is from the Exodus movie. Now, I haven't seen it yet. I don't know that I will. I've been in India, then Singapore, and Malaysia. As the movie has now come out in the States, the Exodus movie, but another massively budgeted Hollywood film by a gifted director, but one that has many Christians frustrated. I want to talk about a bunch of issues regarding Hollywood, regarding faith-themed movies, and regarding faith-driven consumers. My guest, Chris Stone. You can find his website at faithdrivenconsumer.com. Chris has seen the movie, has a lot to say about it. Chris, welcome back to The Line of Fire.
Good to be back. Thank you for having me.
You bet. Chris, before we focus on the Exodus movie and the larger question of Hollywood in the Bible, tell us about faithdrivenconsumer.com, why you've launched this, what the purpose of your organization is.
Well, first of all, Faith Driven Consumer is a marketplace advocate and resource for faith-driven consumers and the brands that want to welcome them. Now, for those who are unclear what a faith-driven consumer is, it's simply a subset of the overall Christian market, those people whose faith is a significant enough part of their life that it influences their daily decisions, where they shop, what they buy, and even what they watch.
All right, so when Hollywood is putting out movies like this, the Noah movie, the Exodus movie, is it trying to appeal to this large Christian base, to these Christian consumers, or is it, this is their artistic expression that happens to be related to the Bible?
Well, if you go back to the prior attempt with Noah, I think they made a serious attempt at reaching out to the faith community. Ridley Scott and Fox and the Exodus movie particularly, they don't seem to have done that. They have, I think in their mind, created a mass market film. The challenge with the film is that if you are not biblically oriented, you may not care. And if you are biblically oriented, the way they chose to make the film really doesn't resonate with you.
All right. So let's just go back a little bit to the Noah movie. I had an opportunity to see it while flying back an international trip, so it wasn't going to cost me a dime. I was on the plane already. I thought, you know, with all the reviews and everything I've heard about it, I'm just not interested in watching it. But the movie obviously was not made by a believer, actually by an atheist. He had freely said that you're not going to find a biblically based movie that's less biblical, to paraphrase his words. It was obviously not going to be one that Christians and Jews, religious Jews, resonated with, and yet they did reach out to Christian community or the faith-driven consumer to try to bring them in. I don't understand this. It seems totally contradictory to me. Do you have any insight on that?
Well, you know, Hollywood has this year made some significant attempts to reach out to faith-driven consumers. Noah was not successful. Other movies, Heaven is for Real is an example, God's Not Dead, or Son of God, have been successful. The people that made Paramount, who made Noah, I think they've learned a lesson, and they're coming back, and they're this year producing Ben-Hur, and they're using people who really understand this market. And that is Mark Burnett and Roma Downey, who brought a Son of God in the Bible miniseries. So they're making an effort. In this particular case, it appears that Ridley Scott was very, very interested in telling the story in a way that was comfortable with him. He's made that. Mm-hmm. He's expressed that several times. He said, even from as a young child, I did not believe the story. I did not believe that parting of the Red Sea. So he's created a natural expectation, even to the point of, you know, for those who know the story,
Moses and Aaron came to see Pharaoh, and they performed a miracle that God enabled them to do. And God told them what to do, and Moses told Aaron, and Aaron threw his staff down, and it became a serpent. And the Pharaoh's sorcerers did the same thing. That whole spiritual reality of the story, the spiritual battle between God and those who would oppose him, is the real focus of the Exodus story. And really, Scott really wrote all of that out. He gave no supernatural reality to anything. The only thing in the whole movie that would be hard to explain without a supernatural reason would be the angel of death and the selective death of all the firstborns. That one's kind of hard to pass off as a natural occurrence. The rest of it, he kind of portrayed as being, well, there's an explanation for this.
Yeah, you know, it's such a bizarre thing to think of telling the Exodus story and then using all of the power of Hollywood and the extraordinary graphics ability of the artists and what Hollywood can produce, and to tell the Exodus story in a non-supernatural way. I'm sure you had people before it came out thinking, okay, so there's DeMille's Ten Commandments, and he did the best he could back in his day, but what's someone going to do with it today? What's the parting of the sea going to look like, and the plagues and all the miracles? And basically that gets taken out, which is absolutely mind-boggling. Chris, what are you hearing from Christians who've seen the movie, from your constituency? What's their response?
Well, the people that we've talked to are taking one of two paths. Either they have seen the movie and they're not favorable toward it, or many of them are just not going because they don't expect much, and therefore they're not going to waste their time or their money. What has been interesting is to see the secular press. The New York Post just ripped it. The New York Times, as an example, we talked with their person in Los Angeles. We talked with a number of Hollywood reporters, and they all find it ho-hum at best. So they're saying it's just not a good movie. Now, at Faith Driven Consumer, we rated it 2.5 out of 5 stars, and we gave it pluses for having reasonable entertainment value, and we discounted it on the fact of its biblical inaccuracy and, frankly, whether it was an intended effort or an actual outcome, it diverts people from the true story.
Mm. Now, yeah, and I was just looking.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, when you look at it from an entertainment standpoint, while the plagues were not depicted with the right purpose, they were fairly entertaining from a Hollywood creation. The Nile turned red because crocodiles chewed up everything in sight and it was blood. That was a little bit far-fetched for me as a Christian. But,
right,
you know, there were elements of the story that, you know, had some merit just from a moviegoer standpoint. As a Christian, it's not our story.
Right, and the large themes, of course, completely missing. I was looking at one website last night, just a news website, and it said click for the 10 worst movies of 2014, and most of the titles I wasn't familiar with, but sure enough, there is one of the 10 worst of the year was the Exodus movie. I thought it is one of the most amazing stories in all of recorded history. It's the foundation of the nation of Israel. As Jews, we look back to the events there as when God declared to the entire world that he alone was God, God of all gods, and God over nature, and the redemptive themes and everything. It's just remarkable that a brilliant director or brilliant producers could get something so wrong. Is there a large-scale war against God in the Bible in Hollywood, or is that a generalization that's just a kind of a closed-minded fundamentalist assumption?
Well, there's a really good answer for that, and that is really it depends on where you go. We're in Hollywood quite frequently. We are meeting with filmmakers, producers, studios, and we find a considerable number of serious Christians who are trying to do good work. So they do exist. and they frankly exist in larger numbers than I realize. On the other hand, there is a force of darkness, and darkness will never support light. We know that biblically. We know that from a practical standpoint. So some of them are willing to make money by creating content for us. Some of them are doing it as a mission, and some of them are just not interested. So just like I think in every part of American business, there's all three factors. It's not as bad as what we thought, but there's a long way to go. And I think fundamentally the problem is they haven't figured out how to reach us as a community yet.
All right. I want to pursue that when we come back. My guest, Chris Stone, faithdrivenconsumer.com. This Christian community that's ready to be reached. We'll talk about that when we come back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Moses, you say that you didn't cause all this. You say that your God did.
From the Exodus movie, this is Michael Brown coming away live from Malaysia, where it is now 4:20 in the morning. So the real challenge is my little crew here that's keeping me company in the business center. Four gentlemen, we had one of the sisters here as well. But keep me company here in the middle of the night. The challenge for everyone is to be able to go right back to sleep after this and then get up in a few more hours for our morning teachings on hyper grace. 866-34-TRUTH. If you saw the Exodus movie, I'd love to hear from you. My guest, Chris Stone from faithdrivenconsumer.com. Joey, you can just click our guest to get him back on for us. Chris, my question is this. You mentioned that Hollywood is still trying to figure out how to connect to the faith community, to the Christian community. I've got no problem with them wanting to make money and make movies that they feel will appeal to us and make money doing it. They're there to make money. I've got no problem with that. But, Chris, what does Hollywood need to understand if they are going to effectively reach these tens of millions of conservative Christians in America?
Well, they need to understand how we think, what we believe, what motivates us. Very simply speaking, take the story of Exodus. There's what happened. You know, Moses led the Israelites out of slavery. There's how it happened. There were plagues, and there were, you know, it was a burning bush, and there was the Exodus out through the Red Sea. That's how it happened. What they're failing to understand is why. You know, the story is a spiritual battle. It leads up to giving of the law. The whole story is about God reconnecting with his people, about God giving them an understanding and pointing at ultimately him sending Jesus to be the Redeemer and the Savior. And that part of it they haven't really grasped. We'll read scripts that are intended for a Christian audience, and we'll find four or five things, and we'll go, that isn't going to work. You know, what we often say to them is, Christians may see that movie, but that movie's not going to the church. You know, it's not part of who we are as a faith. And, you know, to their credit, they're trying to understand us as they would any other market. If they're targeting a Hispanic market or an African-American market, they really have to become intimate with that group of people so that they can welcome them and respect them and embrace them in the way that they're trying to create a business relationship. And really, at Faith Driven Consumer, we're not trying to get people to do the right thing because it's the right thing. We're trying to show them how there is a business model for it. And at the end of the day, it's a win-win. Christians get entertainment, and they get business relationships in the marketplace that they desire, and the business person gets a viable client. It's really good stewardship on everybody's part.
Right. So Over the years, as I've followed the strategy of different groups and followed the strategy of gay activists over the last decade, one of their strategies was the buck stops with us. In other words, we will be very active financially, and those that will work with us and will accommodate our interests will get our business, and those that won't get our business. And then, of course, even though it's a very small percentage of the population, once you add in, quote, straight allies and so on and so forth, you end up with this major group of people. And obviously they're saying, hey, if you want to do business with us, you have to recognize our sensitivities and the things that are important to us. You have now turned around and said, hey, there are a whole lot more conservative Christians in the country, and if we can work in united ways, it's not to intimidate the world. It's simply to say, if you want our business, you need to be sensitive to these things, and if you're insensitive to them, you'll lose our business. So what's happened so far with Faith-Driven Consumer? Since you started, where have things gone?
Well, we're starting to get some traction. People recognize the community. It's well understood, especially in the media. The media has reported on us literally thousands of times over the last year. The community itself is gaining a voice, and brands are starting to listen. We're beginning a campaign, which is not choose us over somebody else. It's simply make us a part of America's rainbow of diversity. Add us in to your diversity campaign. That's not that just makes sense. You know, we're part of, if you go to a major mass retailer and say choose us exclusively, they can't do that. They would exclude 80% of the market. So we're saying simply to them, add us in, include us, speak to us with a special voice as you do others, and in by and large they're welcoming that opportunity.
Yeah, and again, it's business for them. That's why they're doing what they're doing, and you're simply presenting to them the business needs, the sensitivities of a large constituency. Chris, as you work with folks in Hollywood, you said that in certain ways it's not as bad as was seen, because we can, as Christians, often demonize all of Hollywood and think everybody there is they're just there to smash the Bible and mock God. But obviously you've got people who are non-believers but who are morally sensitive, and there are believers working within Hollywood as well. So does that give you hope in terms of the power of Hollywood being used more effectively to advance godly moral principles and biblical themes?
Well, we see God moving throughout our country, throughout the world, and Hollywood is no exception. We're engaging with people who either are faithful themselves, or at least they're faith-friendly. In other words, we call them faith-affiliated. People who have a faith background, or people who are, you know, generally either neutral or positive to the Christian faith and to Christians in general, that are willing to develop and distribute a product that is meaningful to us. So, yeah, I think at this point in time I can say we see the hand of God, and we're excited about it. We're excited that He's chosen us for this small role, and as we continue to be faithful and obedient to Him and working with Him, He continues to open doors. And you know, I would expect that there will be a continual flow of ever increasingly good content that people in your audience and in our community will find enjoyable, something they can share with their family.
Got it. And Chris, we appreciate the work you're doing. Obviously, I'm not looking to Hollywood, depending on Hollywood, to preach the gospel, but if Hollywood can be an influence for good versus an influence for bad, let it be an influence for good. Much appreciation to you, Chris. Thanks for the good work you're doing. FaithDrivenConsumer.com. God bless you.
Thank you, sir. You too.
All right, friends, I need you to take 5 minutes. As soon as the show is over, as soon as you get 5 minutes of time, if we've been a blessing to you this year, if our ministry has helped you, if you've been strengthened by the radio broadcast, the articles, 5 minutes of your time, go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Click on latest video. Please watch it. Help us spread the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
So let me say this again. I am not looking to Hollywood to preach the gospel. In other words, I'm not dependent on Hollywood to get the message out. I'm not dependent on the media to get the message of the gospel out. But if Hollywood could put out wholesome messages more than unwholesome messages, if Hollywood could touch on biblical themes in a way that are in a way that's true to Scripture, rather than that's demeaning to Scripture, well, let it be the better way. Let it be the positive way. If our kids could be watching shows that had the moral values more of a father knows best than of some contemporary reality show on teen pregnancy, then that would be better, wouldn't it? So whatever influence we can exert in a positive way, great, without trying to be strong-handed and saying, you do this, or no, we're just saying, hey, if you want our business, you need to be sensitive in these issues. 866-34-TRUTH. If you saw the Exodus movie, I'd love to hear from you. And thus far, the comments on Facebook and Twitter that I received were overwhelmingly negative and people disappointed, not on the same level that they were with the Noah movie. I didn't see that either, had opportunity to. Flying home, I think it was one of my Asian trips a couple months ago, flying home, the movie was available, it was free to watch, and I thought, nah, it's just a waste of time to watch it, I'll just get frustrated. But if you watched Exodus, want to hear from you, and then I'm switching topics in a moment. Let's go to Raleigh, North Carolina. Chris, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yeah, I love your show.
Well, thank you, sir.
Call.
You bet.
Yeah, I guess the big question on the kind of Hollywood business side of it that just perplexes me is I watched, I think it was God's Not Dead, and from a pure kind of artistic perspective, I thought it fairly amateurish, you know, production, but it was, you know, $3 million production cost. I think it earned at least $60 million. I've read reports of over $100 million. And then you see Hollywood putting out movies that are offensive to Christians, offensive to children. They cost $100 million, and they bring in, you know, 10. You know, so I just don't understand the business sense of it. I mean, regardless of your feelings, it just seems like the business would find a way to say, hey, this is really good ROI, you know, return on investment. Let's figure out a way to make movies that aren't offensive to Christians.
Yeah, it's a great question in terms of why Hollywood doesn't get the memo. In fact, I may be writing an article about that to post. What's today? Today's Tuesday. It's Wednesday morning here in Malaysia. But I may write that later today to post Wednesday night in the States on this very subject of why Hollywood doesn't get it. Look, it's been the perpetual question that when Hollywood puts out a G-rated movie, that per dollar, it's going to bring in much, much more than an R-rated movie. That on average, over the years, G-rated movies have sold better than R-rated movies. Well, you say, well, they're not just interested in making money. They want to make money like every other business and industry. They need to make money to survive, but they have an ideology, and a lot of the people want to express their messages in a way that won't work in G-rated. Oh, okay, I can understand that. But you would think that the predominance of movies that have this ideology that's often negative, that's often anti-Christian, that's often immoral or amoral, and you'd see, okay, it didn't sell that well in the box office, but this family-friendly G-rated movie did, that would tell you something. But all the more, Chris, and you're 100% right, when it comes to faith themes, when it comes to biblically related themes, I'm quite sure if the geniuses within Hollywood, the creative geniuses, put their efforts into coming up with a Noah movie that was true to the biblical themes, that would have been a massive, massive moneymaker. So if you're going to put out a movie on a subject like this and then reach out to the faith community, make it appealing, not offensive to the faith community. I'm with you, Chris. 866-34-TRUTH. We got some more time still, live from Malaysia.
It's fire we want, for fire we please. Send the fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Just believe, right? And yeah. I think this to me is the most, that there's a belief that at the core, this is something, like, so he also probably had breakfast that morning, but we don't think any of those things are relevant, but we do think that his conversion, right. his jailhouse conversion, by the way, is what's relevant.
And, yeah. But we have gone on and on and on creating this language between Muslims and violence, and we need to have a counter-narrative, yeah. and we don't.
That was a discussion a few months back on MSNBC's Melissa Harris Perry show, talking about workplace violence, in particular the beheading of a woman in Oklahoma, an Oklahoma food plant, by a man who converted to Islam in prison. And some were just saying it was workplace violence, others saying no, it was Islamic terrorism, and they're disputing the Islamic terrorism description, and they're saying on the broadcast that look, the person may have had breakfast that morning. They probably had breakfast that morning before they went out and killed someone. So maybe that's the defining factor. We should look at that. That's complete nonsense. That is complete, absolute nonsense. 866-34-TRUTH. I'm mentioning that because this morning I wake up here in Malaysia, get up at 2 in the morning to get ready to do my radio shows. It's now 4:38 in the morning here in Malaysia. I wake up and I see the news, the slaughter of the children in Pakistan, Muslims killing Muslims, Taliban, all right? I wake up to that yesterday. The hostage crisis, which ended up with 3 deaths, including the hostage taker himself, a radical Muslim in Australia. And how many days go by without hearing some news like this in some part of the world? And then a radical Muslim with a murderous act in Canada in the name of his religion. And then the workplace, it was just workplace violence. With the beheading of the person, then a radical Muslim in England beheading an old woman in her garden. You say these were mentally unstable people. I don't doubt that some of them were very unstable. I don't doubt that at all. But the fact of the matter is that you do have a common thread. We don't need a counter narrative to that. We need a common thread. And the common thread is very clear and undeniable. The common thread is, listen, I read a report yesterday that in the month of November, this was BBC News, and BBC News is not known for bashing Islam, quite the contrary. And I say these words circumspectly as I'm here in Malaysia, which is predominantly a Muslim country. BBC reported that there were over 5,000 murders committed by radical Muslims. The great majority ISIS in the midst of war, but here's an aggressive war to kill the so-called infidels and those that have different theology and ideology than they do. the fact of the matter is that these are being carried out not just by Al-Qaeda, not just by the Taliban, not just by ISIS, but by those who embrace this radical ideology around the world, carrying out these murderous acts and doing it fueled by radical Islam. That's what we cannot deny. They're not carrying these acts out fueled by the teaching of Jesus. They're not carrying these acts out fueled by the teachers of other religions. There is something about Islam, radical Islam, that is conducive to these violent, horrific acts, and that part is undeniable. 866-34-TRUTH. All right, let's go back to the phones. James in Fort Worth, Texas. Thanks for calling The Line of Fire.
Yes.
You're on the air.
I just got through watching the movie Gods and Kings just a minute ago. I walked out before it was over.
Got it. And I understand the worst part is the ending. I haven't seen it again. I've been overseas and not sure that I would see it anyway, just to spend the money on it.
I didn't really see the ending because, like I said, I walked out on it because I felt it was an abomination. It is so distorted, the story. What scares me is many Christians have not read the story, and as you know, non-believers don't, but they'll leave this movie theater thinking that's the story of the Ten Commandments, which is it just is not. And
got it.
They posed now, God as a young child in this movie, which bothered me some.
Right. Yeah, I guess that's how God was speaking. So how did Moses seem to you? Did he seem like a strong leader who knew the Lord?
No, I don't. It showed in the movie that he didn't even really believe in the Lord. I didn't feel like he believed in him even when he was with Pharaoh, which in the movie he never speaks to Pharaoh. Moses does this by himself. I mean, God does this by himself. He brings all the plagues without Moses ever speaking to Pharaoh.
Right. So, yeah, again, you know, it makes me wonder, James, that if you want to tell a story, tell a story. But if you're going to use the extraordinary narrative of Scripture and the supernatural dimensions of it, and then you downplay it or you make it something very different, why do it at all? Again, anyone has the right to do what they want. You know, we're not like radical Muslims. You know, if you print a cartoon of Muhammad, we want to kill you. We're not like that. That's not who we are. So if people put out a movie and we differ with it, we can protest. We can say we're not going to see it. We think this is wrong or something like that. But, you know, go and do what you want to do. You're an artist, you're a director, you're a producer, you're an actor. Just put out what you want to put out. It makes no sense to me. And even something that's really meant to be biblically sensitive. I was watching part of the Son of God movie, just one of the segments I saw with the miraculous catch of fish that is described in Luke 5. And the way it was portrayed in the movie, and this is a movie that is seeking to glorify the Lord in many ways, and it's much more edifying, but I watched it and I thought, wow, what they ended up doing was much less dramatic than the miracle in Luke the 5th chapter. I mean, just tell the story as it happened. You're not going to have a better story than that. James, I'm sure you do speak for many. Thanks for calling in. I appreciate it. 866-34-TRUTH. Joey, let's bring Bruce on the line from Dallas, Texas. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hello, Dr. Brown. How are you?
Doing very well. Thank you.
Dr. Brown, I'm a pastor of a church in Rockwall, Texas that my wife and I started back 5 years ago, and actually met you in Pensacola back in 1996, and you prayed for us and the tremendous revival that we were a part of, and my question to you is, here recently, I've had a couple of friends that are Christians, and I've known them for several years, and they're not Jewish people, they're Gentiles like me, but they have gotten into this, I don't know if it's called a movement or a faith or whatever it is, but it's where they have embraced, in other words, going back to the original Hebrew, where they, you know, observe the Sabbath on Friday to Saturday. They don't believe in Christmas anymore. They don't celebrate Christmas. And I just wanted to kind of get your thoughts on that.
Do they claim to be Jews now, or they just feel that having been grafted in? Okay.
They don't claim to be Jews, but they do. One of them even said that when you look at the original text, of when God, you know, said that he was going to, you know, in other words, spread the Jewish or the Hebrew nation across the world, he said it was not exactly talking to the Jewish people, but to us.
Right. Okay. So there are a few separate issues here. One issue is, are Christians free to celebrate the Sabbath on Saturday and for that day to be a holy day between them and God? Absolutely. The New Testament never institutes Sunday as the day of worship or the new Sabbath. So Christians, Gentile Christians as well, are perfectly free to say we honor the Sabbath on a seventh day. In Romans 14, we'd make that plain that is a matter of conscience and between them and God, no problem. And it's also fine to say that we have been grafted into the Commonwealth of Israel. We are now fellow citizens with Jewish believers and with a joint heritage going back to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob by faith. and we prefer the biblical calendar to the later calendar. We're going to celebrate the death and resurrection of Jesus within the Passover season. And Christmas is not a holiday in the Bible, and therefore it's not something important to us. That's all perfectly fine. In other words, there's nothing wrong with any of that. The problem would be, number one, if Jesus is not central in people's lives the way he was before, that if somehow Jewishness or Jewish identity becomes primary. Let me finish this on the other side of the break. Stay right there. It is an important issue, especially as we come into the Christmas season, worthy of discussion.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us as we come your way live from Malaysia, 10 to 5 in the morning here in Malaysia. We've been broadcasting since 3 a.m. It's important for me to be with you live on the air. Thursday is a travel day for me. And my dear friend Scott Volk will be guest hosting, focusing on Hanukkah with some very, very special guests. Joey, one of your favorites, Scott. He's got some great guests lined up, so it's going to be a special show. And then I'm going to be answering a bunch of your e-questions on the Friday broadcast. You've got questions, we've got answers. And God willing, the Wednesday broadcast tomorrow coming your way live from Malaysia once again. 866-34-TRUTH. So right before the break, I was speaking to Bruce in Dallas, Texas, about friends who, Gentile friends who are now observing Sabbath Friday night to Saturday, who don't observe Christmas. And they were suggesting that when God scattered the Hebrews around the world, that could be speaking of the church as well. So here are the concerns that I have. The concerns, as I said, would be that Jesus, Yeshua, is not primary. What I've often seen is that as people get very excited about recovering the Jewish roots of the faith, it strengthens them, it deepens their understanding of Scripture, it strengthens their relationship with God. But I've seen people also go out on the fringe, out on extremes. And the pattern has been, as the Lord laid on my heart years back, that it will fascinate, stimulate, complicate, suffocate. Fascinate, stimulate, complicate, suffocate. That people get this fascination about teaching they didn't know about in background, they didn't know about. It then stimulates. They start getting very excited to study the issues more and to practice certain things. But then it complicates. Next thing, what about others? Dietary laws. Well, all right, but I mean, what about new moons? And okay, but what about these purity laws? What about this? And well, but my family, they do Christmas, they eat pork, so I guess we can't go there. How? And then suffocate. Next thing, they're not sharing the gospel with others. Next thing, they're not reaching out the way they used to. Next thing, their prayer lives are not as strong as they used to be. I've even seen people go the complete way of apostasy as Gentiles ultimately deny Jesus and convert to Judaism. I've even seen that happen because they took their eyes off of that which was central. And what concerns me more is if you're rightly understanding them, they are suggesting that they are the lost sheep of the house of Israel. There is a teaching called the two-house teaching that says basically that you have the Jewish people and you have the lost sheep of the house of Israel. The lost sheep of the house of Israel scattered worldwide are those that we call Gentile Christians, but they're actually descendants of the lost tribes of Israel, and you have to find your tribe. Once people start to embrace that, they are really going in a wrong direction. My book, 60 Questions Christians Ask About Jewish Beliefs and Practices, does address these issues as well as a healthy understanding of Jewish roots. 60 Questions Christians Ask About Jewish Beliefs and Practices. So I'd encourage you to take a look at that and to probe a little more deeply into what they actually believe. Could be perfectly fine and healthy, could be the beginning of them getting off track.
Thank you, sir.
You are very welcome. So we'll probably do this. I'm wondering when. I don't want to do it immediately before Christmas. Is it tomorrow? Maybe tomorrow? I don't know. If not tomorrow, early next week, chat with our team about it. Going to do a broadcast where we do our annual Christmas debate. All right, you're voting for Monday, Joey. All right, I just don't want to be too close. There's still enough time before Christmas. I don't want it to sour people's Christmas festivities. Probably so, though. Yeah, maybe on Monday. But we'll see. We'll probably do our annual Christmas debate where you get to call in and express your view as to whether it's a good thing to celebrate, glorifying Jesus, bringing the message of Jesus to the world. It's a unique time when the whole world is interested in this subject. Not everyone in the world, but much of the world is interested. And it's a great opportunity to exalt the Son of God and for families to gather together. Great opportunity for outreach. And others say, what are you kidding me? We're participating in paganism. We are using all kinds of pagan rites and festivals, and we've departed from the biblical calendar. So we'll see. We'll let you know when we do it. You'll be able to call in and express your viewpoint. And just want to speak to you as plainly as I can, friends. During the first hour, I was sent a link to the Debate Out website, letting me know, this was just posted on Twitter, letting me know that the debate I participated in on consensual incest, should it be legal, it was now up and available. Now, there are four other people who were asked to participate in this discussion, psychoanalysts, professor, different ones. And out of the five that were asked, now again, this is who was asked, but this is a debate that's being had right now. Out of the five, I was the only one who said that absolutely it should be illegal and we need to have clear walls and barriers up. I tweeted out the link. I retweeted it. You can also find it on my Facebook page, Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown on Facebook. And you can read it. They presented things nicely. They presented things fairly in terms of they asked us questions and we each responded to the questions and did a great job of that, highly professional in that respect. I appreciate that. But the fact that it's being debated, the fact that I was the only one out of the five saying that it should be illegal is very, very telling. Friends, I'm asking you to help amplify my voice. Help amplify my voice as your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Help amplify my voice to get on more and more radio stations across America. Help amplify my voice through powerful video materials that we put out, through powerful articles that we put out. There is so much burning in our heart to do. With more funds, we can hire more people to help us. We can bring on others with more expertise to help us do what we do even more effectively. And here I am joyfully getting up in the middle of the night to do the broadcast from Malaysia because we are first and foremost a voice for you 5 days a week, 2 hours a day on the radio. But I could be speaking to even more people right now with the same effort and the same energy with your help. Go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown. I'm only asking you for 5 minutes of your time. Everything we give you, all the radio, the articles, the TV show, it's all free. Thousands of hours of free material on the website. I'm asking you for 5 minutes of your time. Go to AskDrBrown, askdrbrown.org. Click on latest video. Can I ask you to do that? And just watch as we share what we're doing. Edifying stories, testimonies of what's happening around the world. You'll even see it right in front of your eyes. 5 minutes of your time. And then pray about standing with us as a monthly supporter or with your one-time gift. So that's Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Click on latest video. My bottom line today, we as the people of God, without shame, without fear of what the world has to say, must be true to our God and true to biblical values. The world needs us more than it realizes.